I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome to Barnstorming PA. This is our special day after the elections in 2021 mega smorgasbord roundtable. If it goes well, we both get credit. If it's a disaster, I'm blaming Taylor because it's all his idea.
It was my idea. we try and keep it to four usually, but yeah.
We have some newcomers, which we're very thrilled about, and you'll hear from them in a second. But I was teasing Taylor that I think our rate of coming up with an idea or a rule and then revoking it is about 30% for each of us, because I know we've had at least two conversations where Taylor said to me, at most three or four, Jordy, at most three or four. And then out of nowhere, he's like, let's invite nine people. And I was like, okay. So
it's all about flexibility.
Right. I am on the Lewisburg Borough Council. I'm also a facilitator for the Hub for Progress, which sometimes overlaps quite a bit with Barnstorming's thing. Taylor?
Yeah, my name is Taylor Lightman. Pleasure to be here, co-producer of Barnstorming PA. We're a podcast about politics in Pennsylvania. Not exclusively, but usually. I used to work in politics, and now I'm working for a neighborhood revitalization organization. So yeah, I'll kick it to Dwayne.
Hi everyone, I'm Dwayne Heisler with SCA. I'm also on the executive committee for the State Democratic Party, chair of the Progressive Caucus, and involved with quite a number of progressive organizations. And I'll toss it to Jess.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jess Britton. I am the president of the board of directors for Action Together NEPA. I'm also the vice chair of the Columbia County Democrats. In my day job, I serve as a restaurant manager, so that provides some very fascinating dichotomies in my life. And I think we're going to Cyril.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Cyril Michaleko. I'm a progressive columnist with the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer. I also have a show with the Raging Chicken Media podcast every other Wednesday. This is my first time here, and just really happy to be here. So thanks. And I'm going to just pass this off to Dana.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dana Greenwood. I am from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm also a member of SEIU Healthcare PA and a leader in my local chapter. I'm the president. I'm a registered nurse and involved in quite a few different grassroots organizations within my community. And this is also my first time on as well. So I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Jenna. So Steve, you, and then Jenna.
So who's going first? I'm Steven. I'm Steven Caruso. I'm a reporter with the Pennsylvania Capital Star. I cover Pennsylvania House, campaign finance, redistricting, and general political what's going on in zones. There we go. That's a word now.
Steven's a returning champion. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Nice to be back.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jenna Henry. I am an activist and organizer from Center County. I live in State College, which is a couple miles from Penn State's main campus. I wear a lot of hats. I'm the deputy director of a nonprofit called Better for Pennsylvania. I was also the elections coordinator with Central PA United, and I am also the secretary of the Keystone Progress Education Fund.
Right.
Also returning champion.
Yes, Cyril and Dana have now learned that the bar for being a returning champion is it's accessible.
Very high.
So I just want to make sure we plug a couple of things. Cyril, I didn't realize that you have a show. You said every other week with Raging Chicken?
Yes, I do on Wednesdays. With Kevin Mahone.
Does it have a separate name?
Just the Wednesday show, since it's on Wednesday. Show.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he's got a sense of humor, because that's a lot better than Out to Coop, because one time his co-host, I'm blanking on his name, was trying to explain it to me, and he's like, it's Out to Coop, but it's like a coup, and I was like, oh, clearly that one needed another round in the idea room for an audio medium. So the Wednesday show, thumbs up for clarity.
Yeah, no, it's him and Sean Kitchen.
Sean. Yeah. Awesome. And PA Capital Star, I mean, is it 2 years old now, maybe? Is that right?
I think we're coming up on 3 years in 3 years. January.
I mean, it has been such a breath of fresh air, and I'm not just saying that. I mean, you don't know the difference, but because you're coming on, but like, you know, we're in places with small papers, like the Daily Item, which is our paper, you know, the coverage that you guys provide is so good, and you have the Hispanic edition, so it's just a real asset. And I think that you all survived by donations in part, right? So people should head over there and donate.
Donations, right. And wealthy benefactors who remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Anything else we need to plug? All right. Couple of housekeeping things. Of course, we also podcasts like any form of independent media aren't free. So please support us if you can. At our website, there's links to follow to make a one-time donation at PayPal or to become a patron. T-shirts are coming soon and stickers. And everybody who becomes a patron will be invited to some sort of an event that will be fun. And I think I'm signed up to provide some food.
It's a paella.
Oh, right.
You need to see it written out to get the joke, but the PA is capitalized.
Paella.
Jordy, yes, you can write that on your ticker.
yeah. On the captions. Yeah.
And, you know, make a one-time donation or a monthly through Patreon. Even though we're just talking, it's not free.
That's true. One version of that paella I've done, I did actually make meatballs with Pennsylvania venison and it had pieces of rabbit. So paella, if you want to, you know, I shouldn't talk too much, but it is a dish of whatever is on hand. It's not only one thing. So we have a couple of patrons.
Also thank you to our new Patreon subscriber, Harvey and Jen Partica. Thank you so much. And, yes, beautiful.
Yes. Thank you. Two thumbs up. And also Leisha Johnson Harvey, who's been a great commenter in the past. And my mom is also a patron, Marian Von Beck. She told me she can't afford $5 a month, so she's just going to send me a check for 60 and I'll recycle it in. I don't know why that math worked for her, but you know, we've all got our moms. Is there anything else on housekeeping? Oh, real quick, Taylor, I want to read our first piece of hate mail. Is that okay?
Yeah. Is that all right with all y'all?
Is that all right with y'all?
We actually got three pieces of hate mail, so I don't know which one you're...
Let's hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally stole this from another podcast. I'm just going to read a few choice bits. So this was by email. It said, please remove your socialist drivel from my inbox. You have no idea what you're talking about and are doing nothing but spreading propaganda that helps no one. You're probably overly involved white progressives who think you, academics, bureaucrats... and politicians know how to run our lives better than we do. Save the arrogance and Alinsky tactics. That's an interesting question. Would Alinsky have had
a podcast?
I don't know enough about Alinsky to say. Does anyone feel like they're an Alinsky expert?
It's so interesting that he's talking about being an elitist and yet he mentions that person. Like, give me a break.
I mean,
knows who that is, right? What an ass.
That's become a big buzz thing, though, in the right-wing conspiracy theory circles. I'm always fascinated when someone drops an Alinsky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll also say, like, since, like, this person just wrote it on email, we did find out that they were, they led a wealth management group. Just one of these blue-collar, hardworking Americans that's fighting for the little guy, you know, that just wants mm-hmm. bank consolidations, you know, just
listen,
non-elitist stuff, you know,
bootstraps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I will point out that I am a former academic and I am a government employee at $100 a month for Borough Council, but this is a business, although it's more of a wealth draining operation than a wealth management operation at this point.
Yeah. We're very much net negative, but let's move on.
Well, I just did want to share, we have, we're 4.8 out of 5 on Apple Podcasts. And there's a review there that says, Barnstorming PA is always good for a laugh and super informative. We need more Apple. If you're on Apple, please, please, please leave a review, or we'll have to keep reading you that one until the end of time. All right. Quick icebreaker. We're going to make this fast. I'm going to give you 4 dishes, and you have to decide, each person, whether it's something you would add to your table or would never be on your Thanksgiving table. Okay. And 3 of them are PA related. 1 is this cranberry dish from Susan Stamberg, the NPR reporter, called Mama Stamberg's Cranberry Relish, which has sour cream, onions, and cranberries. And I'm actually going to share my screen so you all can see pictures of these. Let's see. Well, as soon as I figure it out. The second one is stuffing balls, which I discovered in a Pittsburgh newspaper, and it seemed really cool. What have I done here? I've created an infinite time loop. Okay, let me try that again.
Flawless execution.
Wow. Yeah, listen, that's why we get paid. Yeah.
Look, based off of the 2 that you're starting with, I'm very concerned about what the other 2 are going to be.
Yeah. Ah, here we go. There we go. All right. Here is a picture of the cranberry relish. Here are the stuffing balls, which are literally just balls made out of stuffing and then fried and then have gravy on them. Your third choice is something called the Pennsylvania Dutch raisin pie, which is raisin, sugar, your typical aromatics like allspice and some vinegar. And 4th is pickled beets and eggs. Okay. Questions? Everybody know what the 4 are? Okay. I'll call on you. Okay. We'll start with Steven this time. Which do you keep? Which do you never have on your table?
Oh, God. I mean, the one that I think I will never have is... I'm not an egg fan. Or not, I know, I like eggs. I don't like hard-boiled eggs. So, like, the pickled egg beet thing, no. I know that probably, like, betrays all my Eastern European ancestors, but I don't think I can eat that. And you know what? Look, I could say the stuffing balls because you wouldn't eat fried bread, but I'll go with – I would try the PA Dutch raisin pie. I actually quite like raisins and, you know, PA Dutch, kind of good.
Very good. Very good. Dana?
So I'm a bit of a carb queen. I as well will go with the stuffing balls, and because it seems like a safe bet, and the raisin pie, but I'm going to say no to the cranberry thing and the
pickle. You only have to say no to one. Two can be neutral.
I'm going to say no to the pickled stuff.
Okay. Awesome. Jess?
So am I really the only person whose family did like the stuffing balls? Like that's like a legit family history thing. Because when you'd cram 25 people into my Aunt Faye's living room to try to eat, then you would just throw them at each other if someone wanted them. So I'm just baffled by the fact that like I seem to be the only one familiar with this. So I'm going to take those for sure. We don't have them anymore. So
oh, look, your cat has an opinion.
Oh yeah, my cat is going to weigh in. He's Sammy. He's annoying. Sorry, y'all. But I would drop that cranberry relish because that I like cranberries, but it shouldn't have onions in it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Cyril, you're next. Oh, you're taking a sip.
I'm with her. Stuffing balls, yes. Cranberry relish, that seems pretty funky.
Yeah. All right, Taylor.
You know, I think I'm going to agree with Steven here. I think I would like to try the raisin pie. Mm-hmm. My impulse is to say no to the cranberry sauce, but I'm kind of intrigued by it. So I think I'm going to say no to the beets.
Excellent. Dwayne.
So you've mentioned that cranberry relish before. I actually tried recipe, and I tell you, never again. No. It was bad. But I have to tell you, though, that, Jess, I think that you've intrigued me with a new kind of Thanksgiving tradition. I love the idea of stuffing balls and tossing them around. I think I'll have to go with that. Yeah.
It's a game changer. Just
saying. I mean, what food isn't better circular and fried?
Exactly.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah. Let's go for it.
Jenna?
Okay, am I the only like real Pennsylvania Dutch person here who has had pickled eggs with beets with every Thanksgiving meal for their entire life?
I guess that's what we're learning, because you know,
it's just a central Pennsylvania thing. Like, I don't know.
It is, in fact.
I love pickled eggs with red beets. I have since I was a child. I make them regularly just to have. So I'm definitely keeping those. I don't know. I think it's a toss up between getting rid of the cranberry thing and the raisin pie. They both seem really awful.
Got to pick one.
All right. I mean, I guess if I have to pick one, I'll get rid of the cranberry.
All right. I myself and people who know me know how much I detest hard boiled eggs, but I have also made that cranberry relish, and it is of the devil. I would never have it on my plate, on my table again. And I would just eat the pickled beets, which I love, and eat around the hard boiled eggs, which I detest. Hard-boiled eggs more than almost anything. And I definitely want to add the stuffing balls. I'm super excited to have picked that one up. All right. So we have had way more fun than probably anyone banked on. Let's go around. Does anybody really hankering to talk about local elections? We're going to talk about local elections and like one or two that you were following closely.
Yeah, I'll talk about my local election. Okay, so we had quite a few, but the one that was the most important, in my opinion, was our school board. So Scranton, the teachers were really hopeful that the board was going to be overturned, and so. Scranton teachers right now have been working without a contract for 5 years. They're negotiating for things like financial reimbursement and healthcare coverage. So there were three new hopefuls on the ballot, two of which were cross-filed on both tickets, and one was straight Republican. So the teachers weren't happy. You know, they didn't get everything that they wanted, but they did get two of them. Some things leading behind the election. So with early turn-in mail-in ballots, there were some articles in the newspaper that were a little misleading. And then we ended up having a school board meeting. Well, the teachers had a school board meeting in the community, and that was the day before the election. So that was really only helpful for the voters that were going to come out and pay attention and come out and vote on election day. So they got two of the three hopefuls. So they got some of what they wanted, but not everything. So, and they went on strike today. So we'll see what happens with that.
Cyril, I don't know Bucks County well enough to know, like I saw on your Twitter thing, there was a Pembridge or Palisades was the school district you were looking into, or both?
I was looking into multiple, right? There was a lot of different, school board races throughout Bucks County. And, you know, in Bucks, we had a situation that's probably not uncommon from your else, where, you know, we had kind of like big money or dark money, and dark with a Q, because we know who's giving it, but they're spending it on like kind of like QAnon candidates, right? And so you have like people like Paul Martino, right, who pumped over $500 or some into school board races across the state. A lot of that was kind of focused on the, in Pennsylvania's first district, which is all of Bucks County. He has his school pack, You have Jeffrey Yass funding money into this. Commonwealth Children's Choice Fund. There's one component that's just kind of like muddying these races, right? Then you have the reopen movement, reopen Bucks, which is a pretty extremist movement. And they're kind of like framing things that's happening in, you know, with health and safety plans in this kind of like apocalyptic language, right? So you have them like kind of like pushing out their shock troops, going to all these school board meetings, right? Even ones they don't even belong to, comparing like wearing a mask with child abuse, comparing it to the Holocaust. One of their members, and this is even part of a lawsuit, accused masking of being a satanic ritual, right? And then finally, you know, we have a local militia, right? The Proud American Patriots Network. And what they are was a, or is, a cell of the 3% militia. And they were kind of forcing themselves into the debates around masking within the Central Bucks School District, which is in Doylestown. And, you know, thanks to the progressive community, like people have been tracking them. They kind of were able to give me information about them, you know, and they announced that they were going to have like this picnic with the Reopen Movement and essentially stake out a school board meeting starting at noon until like 7 o'clock. Right. And so their leader, who's, you know, a former combat vet, like told the Bucks County Courier Times in an interview that, you know, masks represented the tyranny he fought against in Afghanistan. He would not tolerate it here in America. Right. So this is like the framing of school board races and school board issues, which is, you know, supposed to be about kind of like proper funding and allocation of that funding as well as curriculum. And then within that, you know, you have these extremist candidates. We had out and out QAnon followers, right? People who are just unapologetically transphobic or bigoted, you know, running in Penridge, running in Palisades, running in Central Bucks School District, up and down Bucks County. And, you know, what was disturbing or what is disturbing is the fact that, like, these aren't disqualifying features for the Bucks GOP, right? Like, if I had a political party, I would want to stamp out extremism. You know, their big tent or their base actually is the extremism. And these folks got elected into school board. So you have a school board member who's QAnon, who's transphobic, anti-LGBTQ, who actually said at one school board meeting that she wanted like scriptures posted, you know, on the walls, you know, to counter pro-LGBTQ messaging, and even suggested there'd be safe spaces for white people and Christians and specifically men. Women weren't mentioned, or girls. And this is what Bucks County's facing now. And this thing that kind of like, I think the Democrats and the progressive community have to reckon with, you know, when kind of deciding and organizing around the best ways and strategies to move forward. And, you know, as it's pretty disturbing, and sorry for that long rant going off there.
No, that's fine. I mean, that's one of the reasons, you know, I thought it was good to have you. I don't know if we can get a little bit of sort of the Scranton. I mean, Scranton had the labor problems going on already, Dana. Is that right? So, like, did this kind of like toxic mess of either masks or I call it anti-racism instead of anti-CRT, but people who are worried about CRT hysteria, did that come into the labor issues at all in Scranton?
No, it's more about the cuts. There's been a lot of cuts to preschool, you know, programs. The fact that they don't have librarians anymore, they furloughed a bunch of paraprofessionals. Just, you know, not really spending the monies that they had on proper things, such as I guess they fixed up the bleachers in the stadium, but then they cut the marching band. So one student actually spoke. It was a very powerful board meeting. One student spoke about, you know, how are we going to have home games? You know, all of these other surrounding areas coming to our field, and yeah, they'll have these new bleachers to sit on, but they're not going to have a we're not going to have a marching band. So, like, you know, what kind of school spirit are we going to bring to that?
I'm going to say the only thing that might be more Pennsylvanian than pickled beets and eggs is marching bands. I do not know how you not have a marching band in a Pennsylvania school.
Yeah. So they cut things like that. And then they gave themselves a hefty, you know, raise and created some administration, you know, jobs that didn't exist in the past. So the teachers have been silently, you know, just dealing with this during COVID and, for the past 5 years, I shouldn't say silently, but sitting on the sidelines, just, you know, taking the brunt, like it's been put on them and now they're sick of it. And that's why they ended up going on the strike and then they cut their healthcare, on top of it for the strike, which hasn't been done in the past. So that was a big thing too. There's a lot of animosity there between the community, the teachers, and, the board.
Jenna, you said that you have there were some school board races that you were following.
Yeah, here in Center County, well, you know, not just the State College Area School Board, the Republicans were going really hard on the school board races here. There was a lot of that dark Q money, dumped in State College. We were, you know, all four of the Democratic candidates won, fortunately. So we didn't get any Republicans on the State College Area School Board, but just outside of State College in Bellefonte, where there's been this mass controversy around the school's mascot, which is the Red Raiders, with, you know, of course, full Native headdress as the logo. Well, the school board recently voted to remove the logo and change the name of the sports teams, and that created this, you know, so on top of the masks, now they're angry about having to give up their racist school logo, and ran heavy, these, you know, four candidates who all four won. So kind of terrifying things happening out here. You know, you said, why is Raiders racist?
I'm sorry if I'm being too white, but
so their mascot was a Native American.
I was just thinking of the word.
Right. No, the Red Raiders with a Native American.
Now I get it. I'm not that dense.
Yes. They, however, did not. It was amazing to me how many people needed it explained to them why calling Native Americans Red Raiders was racist. Like,
there's a school district in Northumberland County that literally has a wooden Native American, the kind that would be in the cigar stores, you know, like in the lobby. And it's actually named Shikellamy. So weirdly, it's named correctly for a leader, a Native American leader from the 18th century. Anyway,
we had some school board races in Union County that I was following fairly closely. I mean, I feel like in general, you know, like Democrats did well in some places, you know, and they did really poorly in others. We actually picked up two seats, or the Democrat aligned things in Lewisburg, and then in other places, there were more of these insurgent candidates that actually won in more rural and more traditionally Republican places. So I don't know. It seemed like a bifurcated result.
I mean, one of the things about, and full disclosure, my wife is on the Lewisburg School District, but she wasn't up for election. Now she's Virginia Zimmerman. But like, I'd be curious if other people observe this, but like there was a slate of candidates who decided to run, obviously way back in the primary. And it was only this summer when this school district had a chance to vote for sort of basically a safer plan for masking. And a couple of the Republicans on the board, and this board has a really strong norm about being bipartisan, they voted against it, including Lisa Clark, who is a nurse, but voted against it. Then a PAC formed in Lewisburg, a state PAC, and supported those four candidates. That then provoked local conservatives to try and have a write-in candidate run for the fourth unclaimed Republican spot, a guy named Matt Schumacher. And he got 700 votes, announcing about 72 hours before he ran. He didn't win, but it was interesting that there was a race that was moving along, right? And then the sort of summer, I call them the school brush fires, came along and it scrambled that. And Jess wants to talk about North Pittston, but Cyril, I don't know if you want to tack back. I think Palisades also had one of those student groups organized. I'm sorry, parents organizing on behalf of like sane candidates. Is that right? Well, we'll get to you in a minute, Cyril.
Jess. Sure.
You said you had a school district? Pittston?
Yeah, sorry. I had a little chat thing pop up on me accidentally. But
no worries.
For the Pittston area school district, there was just one candidate who is, you know, awesome, progressive. Kathy Healy was running against a slate of four, and apparently they felt very intimidated by her because they teamed up to send out this really gross, really, I mean, honestly, just really bad, like just from a quality standpoint, mailer accusing her of not being responsible in her time as a coach in the area, and allowing students to be injured and things. And these are all things that are totally unsubstantiated. And it was just really disgusting. It was done, you know, a week out, and they were really called out on the carpet, and she blew them all away and was the highest vote getter. So props to her for that. So like a little happy news on a school board race. But just calling that kind of stuff out when you see it is super important, and she's going to be an amazing school director. So,
Stephen,
yeah, I would just jump in. Like, the one thing I've gotten from my interactions with people who have been like in touch with these races is it seems like the Democrats who won are the Democrats who just were kind of fearless and like, this is not a problem. Like, they kind of like wouldn't play the game of you know, talking about critical race theory, talking about like you know, having moral clarity in what you talk about. People are attracted to that. I mean, I sadly never got to use this in a story, just because, you know, usually juggling a few things. But I actually went to Bucks County and did some door knocking with a central Bucks candidate whose name I can't remember, so I can't kind of mention them. But I remember distinctly her knocking on a door, and like, I believe we weren't wearing masks. Look, we were walking around, and without getting into what the mask debate was, like, she goes up to the door, knocks on it, it opens, and then a guy's like holding a mask to his face while holding a dog back. So you can tell like he's taking this seriously. And then I think she kind of like quickly kind of like put on a mask and was asked like, well, what do you think about like, you know, masks in schools? And she's just like, I think we should just follow the experts. And she's like, and the person asked, like, well, that's in the yes or no. I want to know, where do you stand on masks? So I guess this is to say, like, I don't know if this person won or lost, but in that interaction, I saw someone who seemed like they weren't really sure of what, like, you know, they were trying to modulate what they thought. And it sounds like what I've heard is like, people who won are just the ones who are just like, yes or no. Like, they had a clear position and they kind of stuck by it the whole time. Anyway.
And Stephen, I'm curious, this is tacking a little bit from school board, but I think one of probably the most interesting races that happened was the Harrisburg mayoral race, because if you looked at it, it just like there were an absurd amount of write-in votes. Can you give us like what happened with that and who won and what was the result?
Yeah, no. So Wanda Williams, the city council president, beat our current mayor, Eric Papenfuse, in the primary. And Papenfuse has been in for two terms. He's a controversial figure because he just, you know, he's been close to developers, and he's a Democrat, but he at times has endorsed Republicans. He would argue this was Republicans at the state level. What Papenfuse can point to is he managed to get some legislation through the General Assembly by working with Republicans that like expanded the city's taxing authority, that helped to get out of Act 89. whatever the state's like municipal bankruptcy law is. So like, you know, he traded in a way that, you know, I think that he would argue was good, but local Democrats didn't like. And basically he got a primary from it from city council president Wanda Williams, lost, and then tried to run a write-in campaign to stay in office. And that did not succeed. Wanda won with about 2/3 of the vote. So, you know, he tried, he failed. It was a lot of noise for what ended up being nothing. We got multiple mailers from Papenfuse near the end. There was a spate of weird text messages that I believe might have come from the state Democratic Party, but were telling people who expressed uncertainty about who to vote for not to vote, which is the Democratic Party might need to work on who it has volunteer. And it was, yeah, it was a mess of a race.
For people listening, all of the eyebrows of the of people went up about a collect, you know, if you added it up, it was about 4 feet.
Yeah, I had one of these interactions. Someone texted me and said, like, you know, I'm with the Wanda Williams campaign. I want to know, like, are you going to vote for Wanda? And I said something to the effect of, like, I'm unsure. I expressed an uncertain, you know, because this has been a race where if you live in Harrisburg, you're kind of tired of it, because there's just been a lot of, I would say, personal attacks going both ways. And then, you know, so I was uncertain, and the person's response was basically like, if you haven't made up your mind for Wanda, then like, we don't need your vote. She's going to win. Don't bother voting.
You know, when you're walking in a city and you smell something and you can't tell where it's coming from, and it's like 2 blocks away, like Taylor and I know people in Harrisburg, and I can't follow every election, but it just seemed like something in the primary had put a bad smell in the air, because several people we know who are in Harrisburg politics just seemed like no one was talking about it. So I appreciate you shedding some light on the bad smell. Okay, my metaphors need work. And I sort of am not apologizing for how I misspelled Papenfuse, because I'm just sure that there are more P's and F's in that name. Dwayne, you wanted to mention Ed Gainey in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that that's one of the high points of really what happened in local races, to see Ed Gainey winning the mayoral race in Pittsburgh, especially being a member of SEIU Healthcare PA. And, you know, the largest employer in the state of Pennsylvania is UPMC, with over 90,000 employees. And there's some accountability that really needs to happen, you know, when they take home $1 billion last year during pandemic, and there are so many problems with healthcare in our local communities, including the closure of certain like facilities and hospitals because they're, I don't know, not profitable. So I really am looking forward to what Ed Gainey is going to do and the commitments that he made to fully represent the people of Pittsburgh, and actually can have impact on the whole state and what the healthcare system looks like in the state of Pennsylvania.
In Scranton, our mayor, she won in the special election. And I know this is really sad, but I'm not 100% sure if it's a 2 or 4 year race that she won. Dwayne, do you know? With Paige?
Yeah, she's only, she just won now. It's a 4-year term for mayor. Okay. But she hasn't been.
Yeah, so she won in a special election as an independent, and then she was endorsed by the Democratic Party. So, she won now by 70%. So that was huge. Some things that she has done in the small time that she has been mayor was some stuff for small businesses. She secured, I think it was like $2.5 million in relief grants. And she's donated 5% of her salary back to the city, refusing a city car, gas card purchases, things like that. The city has been in a disarray. There was a special election because our former mayor, was found to be pretty corrupt and is in prison. So we need this change, and this was definitely a good thing for the city. Oh, and the Joe Biden Expressway as well.
Wait, is that actually infrastructure or is that a metaphor?
No, it's a real thing. They changed the Scranton.
Oh my gosh, Jordy, driving up to Scranton, my way pops on and says, "You stay on this road for whatever 40 miles, and then exit on the Joe Biden Expressway." And I went, "What?" You know, after like 5 years of nothing but big Trump signs and giant cutouts and all of this crap all over the place. How refreshing was it to see it? I actually took a picture of it. Maybe it wasn't the safest thing if you're not supposed to text when you drive. I don't know. I just had to. I was like, snap, this can't be real. This is, where am I? Am I still in Pennsylvania? What's happening? Yeah, Joe Biden Expressway. There's a Biden Street as well. You know, if you look at all the messaging coming from our president, there's a lot of comparing of Scranton and working for Scranton. And he is constantly lifting up the city of Scranton, and the city of Scranton has his back. They're behind him.
Okay, but shouldn't the Joe Biden Expressway be a train line? I'm sorry.
It should be. But okay, I want to talk about this other
major. Oh, that's coming too.
No, Hold on, Taylor. We got to say something else about Paige.
I want to say one thing about Paige Cognetti. Paige Cognetti has been for years a member of Action Together NEPA. So this is someone who ran as a progressive, boldly, loudly supports progressive organizations and has not run away from that. And I think that's just really telling in this area. And we just want to shout that out whenever we can. And she's been an amazing supporter of our organization. And we need more women, first of all, right? We need more women running for office, but we need more progressives being loud and proud about the fact that they're progressives and that they're willing to put that out there so voters know it and can support them.
She's also, you know, she's somebody who moved into Scranton, if memory serves, right? She's not, as Jenna would say, she didn't grow up eating pickled beets and eggs.
they probably have different regional cuisine in Northeast PA.
Well,
for the first time too, like our city has been in financial ruins. I mean, this, she also was able to finish 2020 with a budget surplus, which was an amazing thing.
She got all kinds of outside funding. Like she went after money on that. She wasn't leaving any money on the table, and she was going after those competitive dollars to bring them back to Scranton. And she was able to do it. I mean, look at the time she spent with the Auditor General, you know, so that tells her how she knows how to kind of work those things. And she's doing it on behalf of her constituents of the city of Scranton, which is so exciting.
There's one more mayoral race before we move on and maybe talk about the broader implications of what happened here. Like, these are all great victories, but we lost the top four, or Democrats lost the last four top four judicial races. But I just want to also say that last week I had mentioned that the Milton mayoral race was going to be something to look at, because there was a Democrat, more moderate Republican, and then sort of a MAGA write-in person. And it looks as though the Democrat won by exactly one vote, which is nuts.
Tom Aber.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by one vote.
Very interesting dynamics in that race.
I assume it's going to be a recount.
Probably. Yeah.
We can't go to the judge elections quite yet. I mean, I have to say that I'm on Lewisburg Borough Council. There are 5,000 people in Lewisburg. Four wards, which I haven't double checked, but that seems like it's very well represented. Like, people in Lewisburg are getting a lot of representation. And in the fourth ward, which is historically the most mix of blue and red, Marlena Lira, who is also a transplant to the area from California, originally in Massachusetts, most recently, who's been organizing vaccine clinics on her own. She's a specialist in substance abuse and harm reduction. She won by 9 votes. She and I were out canvassing on Sunday in the fourth. We talked to a couple of people with big Trump signs. Always comment on the garden and the flowers. You know, that's a good thumbs up. And that election 2 years ago was run by a Democrat against the same Republican by only 5 votes. So that was huge. And the other one in Milton, I just wanted to go back and mention the school districts. Brett Hosterman is an incumbent in the Milton school district, the same place that Taylor was talking about. He had one of these like write-in campaigns that was pretending to be about other things, but was really about masking. That person, he won his election something like 560 to 545, like really close. So just kind of interesting these places where these dynamics are happening. Are there other...
Jordy? Yeah. Jordy, just something to watch. We really need to flag this because we all eyes were on Luzerne County for 2020 and for 2016, right? And we would be amiss not mentioning Luzerne County. Luzerne County was a nightmare yesterday. We lost every single seat on the county council. Offices, in fact, lost. I mean, it was just really, really bad. And I don't mean like by a little bit, like they really lost. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And honestly, it's really hard to envision how NEPA Northeast PA can be won if we lose Luzerne County, because that's the big population centers, you know. Lackawanna and Scranton is big, but it's like, you know, they're only about, you know, they're it's not as big as all the votes that are in Pittston and Wilkes-Barre, all those, and Hazleton, all those cities combined overwhelm the numbers that come out of Lackawanna County. So I think that that's a real heads up for us. And we have to get our act together in Luzerne County. And that's something we should be looking at. I don't want reporters flocking to Luzerne County again at the end of 2022 to cover what happened there, right? So it should be a big wake-up call for all of us progressives looking at Luzerne County and looking at Northeast PA. I don't know how we win a governor's race without having strong turnout in Northeast PA.
Well, and if I can just add, you know, on the point about the reporters flooding into Luzerne County, they're already doing it. You know, they're already watching what's happening. There is an NBC reporter who's going to be embedded in 2022 for, you know, for the whole time. So it's already happening.
Was that the one who showed up on your couch?
Yeah. It's weird.
He's so embedded.
Yeah. He's just hanging out. No, but if I was in Luzerne County, maybe that would happen, but I'm.
Oh, oops. Right. You're in Columbia. Sorry.
So yeah, he's at somebody else's house, but no. And I think it's important because Luzerne County went very, very red in 2016, shifted blue over the course of the next 4 years and cut the margin significantly in 2020. So I think a number of things happened, you know, and we'll have lots of time to debrief and do all of that. But a lot of what I think just my, you know, day after take on this with very little sleep is, you know, they saw that margin being cut and they organized like crazy. And I'm sure lots of, you know, money came in, but if we're not willing to meet that with that same effort and the same resources and the same commitment, it's going to get worse instead of better. And Dwayne is absolutely right. We don't win statewide if we don't improve our performance in Luzerne County.
But isn't that also true of Bucks County? Cyril?
Yeah, sorry, I muted myself. You know, absolutely. And just, you know, I wanted to kind of like piggyback on what some of the other folks were saying. It's just like, you know, we do need more like movement candidates and, you know, unapologetically progressive candidates, but we have to focus on building those progressive movements locally first. And I know there's groups like all over, you know, the state that are doing that, like, you know, PA Stands Up, New Pennsylvania Project, etc. And, you know, I think like we also recently, you know, I think a bunch of high school kids like taught us a lesson recently from Central York, who showed us that like organizing and activism gets the goods because they were able to kind of roll back a racist book ban that their school district enacted. And that's part of like the Republicans kind of like national agenda to kind of like use this neo-McCarthyism around critical race theory, which isn't taught in K-12, but which is a college, you know, level of theory and class. And, you know, it's something that is effective in kind of riling up their base. And a lot of this is just, you know, to be honest, it's a white lash. It's a white lash against the changing demographics of the country. It's a white lash against progress we've made since the 1950s, right? There was a recent poll that came out that showed like only 30% of Republicans think that the country's better off since the 1950s. You know, this was before like the Voting Rights Act, right? Which really was like the first time we were actually a democracy, right? When everyone was able to vote, you know, as well as the, you know, the progress that we made with like women's rights, LGBTQ, et cetera. And, you know, I think just to wrap up, just like moving forward, like we need to effectively communicate why this kind of like, you know, why these culture war wedge issues that they're trying to drum up around, you know, actually like teaching just history as it happened. We need to be able to like clearly communicate and like kind of like debunk that. Moving past that, I think like we need to put forth like a bold and progressive democratic agenda, you know, which centers working class people of color, LGBTQ women and youth voters, you know, all those voters that the Pennsylvania Republican legislature is trying to disenfranchise through their voter suppression efforts.
Yeah. Oh, Jess, do you want me to put that somewhere? I'll put that in the chat. Cyril, I hear you, and this is something that we really have to circle back to at a later point. Like as a progressive, like I completely agree with what you're saying. The reality is to get even close to 50% of votes in a lot of the places that where I live and some of us live, we have to find ways to bring white Republicans into this conversation. There's no, you know, my county is 93% white. My borough is 90% white. Trump was 70 or 80% in some of these places. So without recreating what I think is really problematic, which is somehow, you know, you're going to choose economic populism or multicultural social justice. Like it can't be either or. So I think that we have so much work to do for us about how to do that. And honestly, I don't think that there's a clever slogan. I don't think there's anything Democratic consultants can cook up. I realize I'm going on too long. I think it takes the long, hard work of doing relational organizing, of building communities of interest around these issues. You know, Dwayne, especially, and Jess and some of us, you know, like we know, for example, with climate change, we can't use the same language that is used by a lot of the bicoastal elite. We have to talk about how we're all stewards of the earth. And find ways to do that. But and we have to wait for NIMBY things to come and then pivot, right? As soon as somebody tries to put a tire incinerator anywhere around here, you get all kinds of people from the right and the left coming together, you know, and that there's a recipe for that. We have to figure out how to take that energy and then build it up over cycle. So I'm sorry, I kind of threw six things out, and Cyril, I know it's chomping at the bit. Can you just wait one sec and Jess, I'm sorry, Jenna, were you doing? I'm confusing Jess and Jenna. Jenna, were you going to say something? No.
I mean, I think I agree. I agree with you about, you know, it's a little bit harder in the rural areas, but I think the first thing I really thought though was like, but we had like the first step is actually showing up and talking to those people, which the Democratic Party has just consistently failed to do over and over and over again. And I feel like lots of us, like I know I've heard you say it, I know I've said it, I've heard a bunch of people say it to the Democratic Party, like if you don't start paying attention to rural Pennsylvania, you're going to lose. And we've been saying that for years consistently now, and we just keep losing more and more. You know, so I think just very simply showing up and actually having conversations with people can go a really long way when it comes to getting that progressive agenda across. Because like, my mechanic he's a Trump supporter, right? And I'm talking to him and, you know, something about minimum wage comes up and he starts saying, oh, well, you know, it's bad for business and, you know, prices of everything will go up. And my husband starts saying something to him like, oh, well, you know, prices are already going up. And like, that wasn't really getting through, but I flipped it on him. I was like, okay, well, what about these billionaires that pay their, these CEOs are getting paid $1 billion a year and they're paying their lowest person $7.25 an hour. Are you really okay with that? He's like, oh no, absolutely not. That is not okay. And then says to me, he's like, if it weren't for greed, everybody would have everything they need. I was like, correct. Well, that's a radical progressive idea, isn't it? Coming from a Trump supporter, right? So like, I think that those progressive ideas can really work in rural PA. We just have to get out there and have those conversations.
Sure. And just to kind of like go back to what I said, like when the first thing I said was like the working class. So I meant like the white, obviously white, people are part of the working class, right? It's a multiracial working class that we have in the United States. But if you think about it, like the Democratic Party has kind of like abandoned the working class like decades ago. And you could probably like trace that back to at least Clinton, if not before that, but they sold out the unions with NAFTA, right? And he was able to kind of like pass that when George Herbert Walker Bush wasn't. And it continued through, the 90s and the 2000s with, CAFTA and the TPP, which was supposedly the gold standard. So I think like getting back to that and centering like kind of like issues that pull well, across the board, like everyone wants healthcare, right? Like everyone wants, better wages, right? Better say in the workplace. And on top of that, like when we're talking about climate change, we need to talk about like a just transition, because we do need the transition away from the fossil fuel economy. And that's huge in Pennsylvania, but we need to not do what the Democrats and Republicans did with workers that were left behind from like NAFTA when the manufacturing sector was gutted, right? So we need to have we need to have policies that ensure that with these new industries, with these sustainable industries, sustainable energy industries and renewable energy industries, that we're producing, that we're providing the training and then making sure that these jobs are union jobs, right? And then I think that's like one of the big things that we have to kind of like push moving forward.
Dwayne, you put a couple of notes, and I think I know what you meant, but they were a little cryptic. I don't know if you want to say more about.
Yeah, I just want to be clear. There's one party that's pro-union and one that's not. So let's just like make sure we understand that as well. And I know that firsthand in healthcare, and we can see who's like protect who's really trying to move forward the progressive agenda. It's certainly not the Republican Party. They have a 67 county strategy. They have a PA Dems have a rural organizer, but there's this constant narrative of othering the Democratic Party. It's amazing. If I had a penny for every time I heard a Democrat speak badly of the Democratic Party, gosh, I'd have a lot of pennies. And Republicans, now they might talk badly about this Republican or that Republican, but they never do it against the party. Somehow they figured out that they can all, like sheep, show up and hit the R button, right? And no matter what goes on, isn't Trump the best example of that, right? They can do that. And we don't need opposition, it seems. Like, we're just really good at beating up ourselves. And a good example of that might be like looking at, which had an impact on this election, looking at the two bills that we're trying to get through, right? The reconciliation bill and the infrastructure bill, right? We heard over and over again how there Democrats can't get it done and Democrats can't, how about this? Like, there were 52 senators who were against the Build Back Better, and only two of them were Democrats, right? Like, we have to get our messaging shit together. And stop beating up on ourselves. We need to make sure that we are actually not othering. And the term of othering is used in the union all the time. We don't like when members other the union, when they say, well, the union should do this and the union should do that. Guess what? The union is us, right? Just like we're registered Democrats, if we are, right? Like the idea is that you don't other it. It's by us coming together. And so when you actually internalize the thought of othering, you start to look at things through a different perspective and your own personal messages changes. So I would just encourage people to think about that concept when they're describing their own party And then, like, how does that inform what you're going to say next? So kind of interesting.
Well, I think we should probably revisit that. I mean, I kind of see both sides, and, you know, I think Cyril's analysis is very accurate. There's huge parts of the Democratic policy agenda since the 80s, especially around globalization, that sold unions and working people down the river. You know, they had a chance to make a global minimum wage as part of NAFTA and the GATT negotiations, and they didn't. So the Democratic Party, to me, is always a field of contest, and it is itself a place where there's a fight between economic interests that are not in favor of economic progressive policies and those that are. So, you know, the party to me isn't one thing or the other. I'd like to kind of put a box around that, just because I feel like we should maybe just end a little bit on the judge races. Taylor and I talked about this a little bit. We did interview all four of the candidates for the three appellate courts. I'm really bummed
The Democratic candidates.
Yeah. I'm really bummed that Tamika Lane, Lori Dumas, David Spurgeon, and Maria McLaughlin lost. They were fantastic. Their opponents, some of them were, one, Wallace was not even recommended by the Pennsylvania Bar Association. That is a low bar, no pun intended. So I'm just, in my heart,
they
I'm just saying.
Do a whole branding with that, the high bar, you know?
Yeah, right. I'm pretty gutted. And I don't know where other people are on that. And maybe part of the reason goes with some things that Cyril was touching on, that the Democratic brand and or the Democratic Party establishment, regardless of what you're saying, Dwayne, it wasn't doing enough. I mean, I had candidates for 2022 emailing me 2 days before this election asking for money for 2022. And I was like, what are you doing? Why aren't you spending your resources trying to get the vote out for these judges?
There's one thing that could be said. I remember, you know, there are some Republicans that announced before the 2021 race for governor for 2022. There are also quite a few people who I think specifically waited. And I don't, like, you know, if we're talking about Republicans thinking strategically, you know, maybe give them that. But I don't know. I think with this race, like, I don't think it should surprise anyone that in the first midterm or first election of a Democratic presidency, the Democrats didn't do well in a statewide race. And this is just kind of political. One of the rules of political gravity that hasn't really been broken even by all the insane things we're seeing happen in politics. And people spent a lot of money to try and get these seats. Republicans did outspend Democrats, from what I can tell. There's about $7.7 million spent on this race. That includes outside spending and money raised directly by the candidates. I want to say, if I recall correctly, I think Brobson, the Republican candidate, had about, when you add in the IEs, probably about $1 million. Part of it was that McLaughlin had at least $500,000 spent in negative ads against her from national Republican groups. I think the judicial races are low information. Like, it's kind of hard for people to figure out, like, you know, how to pick a judge. So I think, you know, getting a lot of TV ads, including, you know, a TV ad that is being changed by the Brobson campaign after complaints from the bar. Republicans, it makes sense they want it. And, you know, all Democrats kind of have to do at this point is to look ahead for 2022. What lessons do you have? How can, their statewide candidates, so Josh Shapiro and their Senate candidate, do better?
I think that this, what happened last night proved to me that the road to the governorship runs right through North Philly. And Philadelphia did not show up yesterday, and we lost as a result of it. I mean, Maria McLaughlin got 144,000 votes in the city of Philadelphia. Tamika Lane, who is from there, got even less. You know, Lori Dumas, who was also from there, got even less. She got 139. Tamika got 140. David Spurgeon did the worst of any of the candidates, which I find interesting because a lot of people were expecting him as the white man to do better, but he didn't. I do find that very intriguing. But, you know, Joe Biden got over 600,000 votes in Philadelphia. So, I mean, for the city of Philadelphia to only be turning out 144,000 votes for a statewide Democratic candidate, they just didn't show up. I mean, some of the wards in North Philly were only, you know, 1,000 people showing up, and that it made all the difference. It really did. I mean, more people voted in Allegheny County than the city of Philadelphia, which is much smaller. So it's
probably about a third. I'm just guessing.
Is yeah. Right? I mean, I don't think there's any one factor. I think that there are a lot of different factors. I think that there was a lot of outside things at play, but I think there was also a lot of internal issues. The candidates, I think, had fundraising troubles, and they just got obliterated because, you know, for whatever reason, the donor class of the Democratic Party just doesn't pay attention to judicials. They just don't. We've always had a hard time getting them to pay attention to judicials. I know, just like, you know, even running IEs, it's hard for us to get funding to do an IE around a judicial race. I don't know what we need to do to make that click. You know, maybe this was it. Maybe this was it. Maybe this is the thing that we can be like, look, this is going to keep happening if we do not start really putting the resources behind these judicial races.
Yeah, that's great. Stephen, do you have any, I don't know if I can pitch to you as like the person with the PI, the whole PA perspective as a journalist, did you, I know it's very early too, but did you notice anything? Like you mentioned political gravity, I think Jenna maybe probably gave us a lot of the analysis with talking about North Philly, but, you know, people tend to look at who won the vote, but you got to look at who voted, right? Of course, like all of us have been involved in campaigns. How you shape the electorate as campaigns or outside groups is the first thing. So if turnout was higher in rural areas and lower in Philly, that's going to favor Republicans.
Yeah, so turnout was low. I mean, in Philly, they're at about, this is Axios Philly, their turnout was 18.4% on Tuesday, according to unofficial results. And I believe the normal, this was according to the committee of 70, normally you're looking at 20 to 25% turnout in Philadelphia for these sort of elections. So yeah, I mean, turnout was definitely low in Philly. There wasn't really any competitive elections on their general election ballot. Not that Philadelphia typically would have super competitive general elections, but you know,
that's a great point. The primaries are where most of the heat is and the attention.
Yeah. But we had 40% turnout in Union County, which
35.
Okay. Which still strikes me as high. You would think in the high 20s or something like that would have been more reasonable.
Yeah. Like I haven't had a chance to look at every county's turnout, but just, you know, like what I go back to is that Democrats can definitely talk about like how it could have been won. And I don't mean that as shade, but it's like, you know, it would make sense that Republicans are going to do well in this election. Like it's just, that is kind of what happens. And I think that when you look at it, one thing I was saying about with local races, like if there's one place that, from what I can tell, Democrats had a bright spot was Allegheny County. There actually were a couple of competitive school board races there, and they actually managed to like flip a city county council seat from Republicans. Some of their like 2017 babies held on. Including a Democratic socialist candidate a Democratic socialist candidate in like the leafy suburbs. Whatever Allegheny County Dems or the local organizers there did, I would imagine a lot of Democrats should be talking to them about how they managed to do pretty well, even as across the state, there are some maybe more disappointing results for Democrats.
Yeah, for sure. So we're gonna try and sort of wrap this up. I think I started this segment on a kind of down note. Last thing I want to say is I think that there's, for me at least, a line connecting the critique Cyril was bringing up and what Jane was saying about how important the party is the one place where we think we can make a difference. And it gets to this question of execution, which you kind of mentioned, Stephen, right? That, like, I feel like a lot of times people come into races and they have a 6 or 9 month time frame or 3 month, and they're told you can do this or this, and they can look at how much money you can dump in ads, and that can make a difference in a single election, but that doesn't add up to the kind of party building and community building that we have to do that's going to actually bring people in. You know, I sometimes get sick to my stomach looking at how much money is spent on ads, and I think if you paid somebody to do year-round organizing in some of these smaller places in the Luzerne's, you know, in the Lackawanna's and in parts of Bucks County, then you're not always sort of continuing to rely on the same levers, which is throwing a lot of money short-term into ad campaigns instead of finding ways to build a vibrant party that's really bringing people in. So it's just that's not sexy, and it's and it takes time, and I to me that's part of the problem, is we have political parties that are shaped by decision makers who want to make short-term decisions that they can see where the dollars matter in a single cycle. Dana, do you have any, you know, you want to bring it back to Scranton or any other thoughts?
And then just touching on everything that everyone was just kind of saying, I agree with all of you in certain ways. I think that the Democratic Party does need to come together. But I think that it's really important for us to also be holding people accountable as well. And, you know, a lot of people aren't excited about campaigns. And me personally, I think that our representatives should look more like us. They should be leaders and advocates, like nurses and union members, you know, a pipe fitter or a construction worker. They need to represent like the people that are within the communities. So those are some things that excite me in a candidate. That's what I look for. I look for someone that has some things in common with me and that are fighting for the same things. And I know like that is the Democratic, you know, way. We definitely are more for working people, for sure. But I would just like to see more common people get involved and run for these elections so that, you know, we could try to get some of this big money out of what is really influencing both parties, in my opinion. That's just me.
Cheryl?
I agree. Yeah. And I thought that was great. And yeah, just to kind of continue on that, and with what Jordy said, yeah, the community building and the movement is going to be key, and just kind of having this like outside inside strategy, not only within the Democratic Party, but just like kind of like politics in general, you know, on a national level as well. And getting some new blood, not only as candidates, working class candidates, but getting them in control of the, you know, of the parties at the county level, I think is something that's necessary, because like you have this kind of old guard that's been clinging on to power for a long time. And, you know, I think, like you said, it's time to kind of like turn a new page with the direction that the party and the country is moving.
Awesome. We went a fair bit over. I'm sorry. I was right to not even have a game. Taylor, do you have any, you know, last word?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll just say I kind of agree with Stephen. Like, I do think it could have been worse. Like, this, you know, this is kind of typical. And we held on to some seats, and there were bright spots in a lot of places. I don't know. It continues.
I'm really proud that none of us actually were like, this means X for the midterms, right? Like that actually kind of bugs me. I'm like, it's really complicated. There's a lot of noise in the system. We need time to look through the data. So
yeah, I agree. I and on Twitter this morning I wrote the word of the day is bifurcation, because I feel like there were some really like amazing like results, like, and some really terrible ones. And then it seems like as soon as like before the paint was dry, the moderates were saying, and this is why we need to, you know, why we need to be more moderate. And the progressives were saying, this is why we need to be more. And it was just like, oh my God, we haven't even really looked into it.
Yeah, they suffer from premature frame ejaculation.
Didn't want to have a circular firing squad? Sorry, yeah. I thought I just came on here to moderate one. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm such a pacifist, you know, I would have like a Nerf gun anyway. Thank you so much, Cyril Michaleko, and Dana Greenwood. Thank you to Stephen Caruso. Keep doing all of your great reporting. Everybody should go and give money to Cyril. Give money, not just give money. Follow Cyril's newsletter. Give money to Pennsylvania Capital Star so Stephen continues to look so great on video with his style. Dwayne, thank you for everything you're doing with SEIU Healthcare. Dana, hope to hear from you again. I think I've thanked you four times now in the wrap up. Thank you all, and this will be out on audio.
Yeah, and donate to Action Together NEPA too.
Oh yeah, and us.
Yeah, and brainstorming.
Oh yeah.
Yay. I don't blame you. I said, air man, I breathe the mountain air man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Millview, Rockview, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Roots, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Willisburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Schick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a dandy. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.